This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The first Republican-led General Assembly in more than 100 years is now in session, and lawmakers have made reshaping North Carolina's public education system a top priority. Two bills with the potential for far-reaching effects are under consideration. Senate Bill 8 would lift North Carolina's current cap on charter schools. The existing law limits that number to 100. Meanwhile, in the other chamber, House Bill 41 would offer parents who want to send their children to private schools voucher-like tax credits. Here to help us take a look at the legislation in process is Dave DeWitt, WUNC's education reporter. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Frank.
Also with us in the studio is Helen Ladd. She is the Edgar T. Thompson Distinguished Professor of Public Policy and Economics at Duke University's Sanford School of Public Policy. Welcome, Helen.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
It is good to have you. Joining us from the studios of WFAE in Charlotte is Daryl Allison, president of Parents for Education Freedom in North Carolina. Welcome back, Daryl.
Nice to be with you again, Frank.
Good to have you. Dave, let's start by taking a look at the bill in the Senate. It's going to essentially provide an unlimited number of charter schools in the state, right?
That's right. It'll take the cap of it's currently at 100 completely away. And it does a couple of other things, too. It creates an independent commission to oversee the charter schools. Now, decisions that commission would make could still be overturned by the State Board of Education with a three-quarters vote. Several of the Democratic amendments didn't get through, including one that would require charters to provide transportation and food. So it's a bill that Republicans wanted to put into place very early in the legislative session. They've gotten it through the Senate now, and it's now in the House Education Committee.
Daryl, this is legislation that your group supports. Tell me why.
Well, you know, I think we just need to look at the landscape. We have nationally 41 states, including District of Columbia, that have charters operating. And again, as I always like to say, Frank, it's neither charter versus traditional public school. It's just in the 21st century. I think we need to be open-minded to great innovative endeavors in public education as we know it. And we think that charter has its place in the spirit of Barack Obama and Arne Duncan, the U.S. Education Chair. And then when you look at North Carolina, when you look at the fact that we have over 20,000 dropouts each year in the state of North Carolina, we have the 46th lowest graduation rate in the nation. I think it's time for some change, not radical change, but some change in the way we deliver good quality public education. And so when you examine the fact that of the cap at 100, which we are at essentially in a few months from now, there's one school in Durham that will be officially 100. And when you look at the fact that we have over 20,000 families on waiting lists, I think that with the high demand for such and the need for us to do something beckons a call for action. And I applaud the leadership in our General Assembly. They campaigned on it.
Right.
And not only Republicans, but some Democrats as well, supportive of that.
Let's take a look. Because as you pointed out, Daryl, there are 99 in the state now. Some of them have been up and running for a while. The schools began in charter schools 1996, Helen. So you've looked closely at the performance of these schools. How are they doing?
So when I looked at the performance, and this was 4 or 5 years ago now, so I haven't looked at it in the last year or so, some charter schools were doing a terrific job, but the bulk of them were not. And on average, it looked like students who were in charter schools were doing less well on state tests and other measures than they would have been doing had they stayed in the traditional public schools.
Dave, give us a profile of charter schools around the state. Are they similar to each other? Are they very different?
They're very different. And we've seen charter schools that have been started by educators that have done very well. You think of Raleigh Charter High School, one of the top high schools in the country is a charter school that's doing extremely well. There are charter schools that are liberal arts focused, Montessori focused, math science. There are some that address specifically the needs of African-American males, which we all know in our education society, that's a group that really needs to continue to be addressed and have special needs to sort of help those students come up to par. There's one in Asheville called ArtSpace that integrates arts into all aspects of the curriculum. So it's important to know that you say charter schools, it doesn't mean one segment of one type of charter schools. There are also for-profit businesses that start charter schools. There are business groups that want to start charter schools. So it really ranges far and wide, and it gets to the heart of the conversation and to some of the debate over how much oversight there should or should not be.
So that does seem to be the heart of the thing, Daryl Allison, oversight, the details and outcomes. You're president of Parents for Education Freedom. You've thought about this. What makes a good charter school? And what would have to be in the regulations, if you're authorizing these, to assure that that's that you're going to get good outcomes?
Well, I think you know, when you look at this measure, this bill, I applaud the fact that we have some type of independent commission, if you will, that has direct links to the State Board of Education, where there's oversight. And I think that you have to, first of all, start at the top. You have to make sure that you have the right leaders on those commission in the commission who has a heart for charter schools, open, not anti, and at the same time knowledgeable, and moreover have good accountability standards in place. When from the top down, then you will be looking for applicants, leaders, operators that have a good plan, a good financial plan, good curriculum, if you will. And this idea that somehow eliminating the cap on charters is somehow going to be the wild, wild west, 1,500 new charters in 1 year, I think is very much a stretch. Because I think also for those of us who support charter schools, the idea is that that somehow we just like charters for charter's sake. No, we like good quality schools. And so some years I can see from this commission that they may only grant 5 schools for the year. And in others, they may grant 20. But at the end of the day, it's the key of it is forget the model and make of how we deliver public education. We want to be focused on good quality schools. And so, again, where our traditional schools are doing an awesome job, great. But when we have a large number of traditional schools that are not, why not open up the opportunity for some other parents and children across our state to be able to have an option such as a charter school.
Helen Ladd.
So I don't disagree with that basic notion. The focus ought to be on quality schools, not so much specifically on the quantity or the number of charter schools that are authorized. One of my questions is, would this new commission be willing to shut down charter schools? My sense is over the years there have been a number of low-performing charter schools. So it's not only a matter of figuring out carefully which charter schools should be authorized initially, but also whether we as a state have the are willing to shut down low-performing charter schools.
Dave?
And not only that, just sort of from an evaluation standpoint, is a charter school that states an express interest in serving a particular community, is that school going to be evaluated differently than other schools? You know, the way we evaluate schools right now are basically on test scores. Does that mean then that schools will be reluctant, will be more people who are reluctant to open charter schools to deal with students who are low achieving now because they may be evaluated in a way that's not going to be to their credit? We want to, I think most people, even whether on any side of this debate, want to see a wide array of charter schools. They don't want to see a sort of thin slice. But there is the concern, particularly among opponents, that they want to, that there might be some students who get left behind in this process.
Well, let's talk about that in terms of diversity, too. One of the lawmakers who authored the original legislation wrote that within 1 year after charter schools begin operation, the population of the school shall reasonably reflect the racial and ethnic composition of the general population within the district or the special population the school seeks to serve. Daryl, are charter schools doing that? Do they have to make an effort to be diverse, and should they?
Well, I think I'd be hard pressed to find. I've yet to see a charter school, and we visit quite a few that discriminates on race. And I want to hit on this point, very, very, very key, because Dave, I think you hit on something here that I think we need to be open minded to in the 21st century. Of the 99 public charter schools, we have 31 charter schools that represent. The makeup of 60% of them are 60% minority and 60% free and reduced lunch. And so the other point in terms of student performance, and this is, I want to make perfectly clear on this point, that as of right now, there is no charter school in the state of North Carolina that has been given the lowest category of low performance in North Carolina. 52%, over half of our charter schools have been categorized as schools of distinction or higher. And you compare that to the other traditional schools at 38%. So that being said, yeah, when we look at 15 years out the gate, charters maybe had a bump in the road here and slow takeoff. But if we look at the recent years up to now, we have been steady gaining, and that is key.
Helen,
but also,
we're about to hit a break here. I want to get Helen Ladd in here, and then we're going to come back and continue the conversation, Daryl. But go ahead, Helen.
So I have a very different take on this diversity issue, and if I have any concern, or my major concern about charter schools going forward, is that we will end up with much greater racial segregation in our schools in North Carolina. The research that I did with my colleague Bob Bifulco a few years ago made it very clear that when black families choose charter schools, they choose charter schools that have a higher proportion of African Americans than the public school they left, and white families is just comparable, but the reverse. They choose whiter charter schools. And as of a few years ago, a lot of the charter schools were much more racially segregated than the traditional public schools. And I fear as we move forward down this line and take away any attention to the diversity in the schools, that we will end up with lots and lots of very black charter schools and many very white, and it could be by income as well as by race.
Well, let's stop on that point. We're going to come back and pick it up when we return our conversation. My guest, Dave DeWitt of WNC. Helen Ladd is with us at the Public Policy School at Sanford at Duke, and Daryl Allison, President of Parents for Education Freedom in North Carolina. We're going to pick up the conversation where we left off on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio Broadcast Service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Today we're talking about pending legislation that could change the public education system in North Carolina. With me in the studio are Dave DeWitt, WUNC's education reporter. Helen Ladd is the Edgar T. Thompson Distinguished Professor of Public Policy and Economics at Duke University Sanford School of Public Policy. And Daryl Allison is President of Parents for Education Freedom in North Carolina. Now, before the break, Helen, you were saying that you're afraid schools would become even more segregated than they are now in North Carolina. It's hard to imagine, but I'll ask you about that. But you said that parents who choose, that African-American students who go to charter schools, their parents overwhelmingly send them to mostly African-American schools. That's their – it's a choice they made. So that must mean they think their kids are going to do better, do they?
Some do, but on average – the African-American students who are in charter schools that are disproportionately minority end up doing much less well, even less well on average than do other students in charter schools, according to our data. But you're right that those students' parents have chosen those schools initially. Now, there's a lot of turnover in charter schools. So parents choose charter schools, then find those schools are not meeting their needs. So parents leave those schools. So that, by the way, creates all sorts of challenges within this mixed traditional public school and charter school system as you have kids moving back and forth. So a lot of turnover. That's one point. There's another point here that interested me as we were doing our research. We tried to infer what parents were looking for as they sent their child to schools. We found that white parents were looking for charter schools that had no more than 20% minority students. Black students, black families, were looking for schools that had 40 to 60% white or black. So mixed, evenly mixed. But in fact, it's very hard to find charter schools with that 40 to 60% black because of the preferences of many white families. So schools that become more than 30 or 40% African American then tip and become even more African American. So I think this choice issue is a lot more nuanced than one might think.
Daryl Allison?
Yeah, I'm not an authority on this, but I am African American, and I have a different take. We're all for diversity. But I also think we need to really take a critical look in the 21st century. Should we sacrifice good quality options, good quality education for the sake of diversity? I have to say, let's look at the facts and the stats here in our public education. When you look at end-grade test scores, the achievement gap between minority and Caucasian students is growing. We are about 40% proficiency in the grade test scores, African-American minority. When you look at the African-American male graduation rate, 41% in the state of North Carolina. And so we have to take that in consideration. And then let's identify those charter schools that are focusing in on those students, and let's look at the success. I'm by chance happens to be in Charlotte, North Carolina, and one of the strongest schools, 700 students, Sugar Creek Charter School, is knocking the ball out of the park in performance. 90% of their students, well, 95% of their students are minority. 90% of their students are free or reduced lunch, and they are outperforming not only similar situated students in charter schools, but traditional schools by 20 and 30% in math, reading, et cetera. And so again, diversity is important, but if parents choose to not just go to black charter schools, but charter schools that are a majority minority, and they are performing well and performance is at all-time high, we cannot bar that. We need to get behind that and support that.
Well, Dave DeWitt, it sounds like there may be a difference between schools that have minority populations by happenstance and those that have targeted minority populations or underserved populations. Do we have any data on that overall? And maybe, Helen, I'll ask you the same thing. Again, a school that is 100% African-American or minority because they've targeted that population, that might have a different outcome, it seems to me, than one that just simply became that way through happenstance.
Well, that's certainly been tried in North Carolina and elsewhere to sort of target a certain population and then try to help, you know, specifically tailor an education program to help that population. What's interesting in North Carolina and elsewhere, you know, that's been happening in private schools too, that people that have tried to do that with ranging success. Some have done really well. You think of the KIPP programs, and you think of these things that have done really well with very targeted and very specific student populations. Now, whether or not that can be sort of broadened out and done on a larger scale is sort of remains to be seen. But, you know, if you're targeting sort of the low income students and really trying to attack some of the problems that those students face, you know, in charter schools are not going to be required to offer lunch or transportation, for example. Now, only I think it's about a third do now offer transportation and lunch. And yet, free reduced price lunch percentage in Durham alone is 57% of students qualify. It's 32%, I think, in Wake. And it's somewhere in between that for most school districts. So there's a higher percentage of free and reduced price lunch students than there are charter schools that are going to offer that. And you would think it's unlikely that the new ones would offer that because that is additional cost to the charter schools.
And they're not going to get any more money for it. Daryl, right. Are you concerned that this becomes a de facto barrier for economically underserved people, underserved families who just don't have the money for lunch and that sort of thing? They're not going to choose those schools because they don't have transportation or meals that they're going to get in traditional schools.
And that's a good point. But we have to look at this twofold. There are a number of minority-majority charter schools that have opted not to participate in the federal poverty program. And the key point I want to make here, ladies and gentlemen, is about money. For those that opt to participate in the federal program, what comes along with that are facility requirements. And so that's where you get the shocker there for schools in that, you know, we're looking at, you know, tens of thousands of dollars extra that have to come out. And charter schools do not get facility funding. So, but here's the other point we know. With existing charter schools, the vast majority of charter schools right now, though they do not participate with a federal poverty program, they do provide food services for those kids that need it.
But they won't be required to.
Well,
they won't have to.
The Senate Bill 8 is Senate Bill 8. We're in the House, and not a perfect measure by any means, stretch of imagination.
Do you think it should? Do you think the final legislation should require those transportation and meals?
There's been some discussions in terms of how do we find that happy medium, and I think that will be discussed, and I'm hoping for a more perfect measure when it's all finished and done.
I want to change chambers now and talk about a different bill and invite to the program North Carolina Representative Paul Stamm, who is one of the sponsors of House Bill 41. Paul Stamm, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good to have you here. Tell us about this bill. This is going to create a program that allows people to take a tax credit and perhaps go to take their children to private schools.
That's right. It's about $2,500 a year if they move from a public to private. And the reason for it is, well, there's several reasons, to give the parents and their children more choices. And secondly, they're saving the state a bundle of money.
How do they do that?
Well, it's cost a whole lot less to give the credit than to educate the child. And our fiscal our nonpartisan fiscal research division has given its opinion that this will save state and counties about $50 million a year, which in a tight budget year is a good thing.
Well, let me ask Helen Ladd at Sanford's School of Public Policy how that works, how a $2,500 tax credit then would save the state money if you took that child out of the school, public school now, and they're you're educating them yourself, private school.
I hope you'll let me call this tax credit a voucher, because that's in fact what it is.
Let me ask the question, because, of course, it's ironic because at Duke, they North Carolina residents at Duke actually do get a voucher, but this is not a voucher. Because the money does not go to the school. The money goes to the parents. The school doesn't even know about it unless they just happen to tell. So why are we calling a voucher something that is not a voucher if you read the dictionary?
Well, one way, well, whatever we're going to call it, we know that $2,500 of public money is going to go right into the pockets of an individual and ultimately end up in a private school. And the question is, Helen, if that's true, does it save the state the difference between what it cost to educate that child and the $2,500 we gave him at tax time?
So my big concern about this is, well, I have a number of concerns, but responding just directly to the cost function, I think it's misleading to think about cost savings without paying a lot of attention to what's may happen to the number of students in private schools compared to the public. So let's say this did provide an incentive for many parents who already have their children in private schools to put them in public schools for a year and then put them back in private schools. That's additional money for the state, an additional cost that otherwise would not have been there. And then if there are other parents who otherwise would have stayed in the traditional public school, but now we increase the numbers in private schools, it's not clear we're going to get the financial gains. And I don't think we should be talking about this only in terms of that narrow funding issue. What we're really interested in here is making sure that this state provides quality education for all the students. If there's public funding for quality education, it's important that we have some control as a state over the quality of the private schools, and we just don't have that.
And Paul Stamen, in fact, you have made a point of saying that you're proud of the fact that there is no accountability in this. Once the kid is in the other school, there's no none of the bureaucracy that would provide oversight, and you're very proud of that.
Well, there's no additional control. We actually know that the private schools are providing a better outcome than the traditional public schools. But just to take the analogy, does the professor want to say we shouldn't have the legislative tuition grant goes to Duke students? Because certainly the state of North Carolina does not control education at Duke at all. And yet we give those students an average of about $3,000 per year. Public money going to Duke University, and they actually get the check. Same question.
Dave DeWitt.
Well, and I just to sort of clarify, I think what you're talking about, Representative Stam, is not just students who go to Duke, but to any private university
right
in the state.
There are 35 schools, four-year liberal arts schools, including Duke University.
And the notion is that because those students are not going into the UNC system, that's not money that would have to be paid to educate that student in the UNC system, so they give a small voucher
right
tax credit or whatever.
That is true. That one's actually a voucher. And we've done it for 35 years, pretty much without controversy, and they always say it saves money, it helps education, it helps UNC to have the competition of the other 35 schools. But suddenly, if that exact same economic idea is translated to high school, it becomes a horrible a thing. And I don't understand the logic.
Well, is there a difference in basic education? The basic education K through 12 is
yes.
a fundamentally different thing, isn't
it? I think it's fundamentally different. For one thing, K through 12 education, or at least to the age of 16, is compulsory. And so we need to step back and say, Why has this state and every other state made education for younger children compulsory? Clearly, there are important public benefits from having a good education system in the form of better citizenship and preparing people for jobs, so it has impacts on the economy. The fact that we would be spending public dollars for this education means that it's, for the K through 12 education in particular, means it's very important that we pay attention to the quality of education that those children receive. And so the fact that private schools at the K through 12 level are not held accountable, I think,
But Representative Stamm, you're saying that they are getting a better education in those schools than they are in public schools.
Overall, not every school, but overall, sure.
How do you know that?
Their results are open to inspection by the public through the governor's office, Office of Non-Public Instruction, and they actually have to use nationally normed tests, whereas our traditional public schools have these made-up end-of-grade tests where we pick our own passing score and they're not compared with other states. I mean,
well, that's a good question.
Parents have a better way of judging a private school's progress than they do with the public schools.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, Daryl.
And I appreciate policy and politics and, you know, this, but there's another P that we need to really put a focus on. That's parents. You know, ladies and gentlemen, in the state of North Carolina, we have almost 700 private schools in the state. And unfortunately, the unintended consequence in North Carolina is that if you're wealthy, you have every option available to you. You have public school. You have private school because you can stroke a check. But the working middle class, working poor, you have not such options. So, in other words, where you are zoned to go to that traditional school, that's a crap shot. And the lower income in that community, the more trifling that community is, the challenges you have in that community, odds are the traditional school that you're assigned to doesn't work for you. Mm-hmm. So you have a number, high concentration of families and parents who are trapped in a system that is not working for them. And so in 21st century, I think we need to adopt a diversity of schools model to where, regardless of where you live in the state of North Carolina, around your block, whether you be low income, middle, or high, that there's a quality traditional schools in that neighborhood, quality public schools in that neighborhood, charter schools, and private schools. And that, while not looking at opportunities of where we can allow working middle class families to be able to exercise and access those array of schools.
But if you talk about private schools and a $2,500 tax credit, Representative Stamm, there probably are no $2,500 private schools. That would be a real barrier for low-income folks to actually take their child to a private school. They're not going to be able to come up with the extra money.
2 points. There's less of a barrier if they have $2,500 than if they have zero. The second point is the bill also provides that county commissioners can chip in another $1,000 with discretion. But as a matter of fact, there are lots of private schools that have tuition of $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. And I'm talking quality private schools. So what this credit amount does is gets you most of what you do, most of what it would cost.
Well, let's talk about accountability because it's come up several times. And right now, our accountability is based on just a couple of tests, Dave. How do we measure success? And is it adequate in any of these programs that we're talking about to really make a sensible decision? If we're talking about a market decision, you need to have the good information. How do we assess outcomes right now, and is it good enough?
Well, I think Representative Stamm just hit a little bit on some of the issues and all of that accountability. He mentioned sort of the state tests that are created to, and the state sets its own passing number and creates the test itself. Whereas students in private schools, most of them take what's called the Iowa Basic Skills Test, which a lot of students take all over the country. So just in that little thin slice right there, we see a wide range in accountability. Do we judge the school? Do we judge the student? Are we able to judge the student all the way through the process? And how does that student, if that student bounces around from public school to private school and back, or maybe not back, are you able to sort of follow that student along and figure out exactly what that student's needs are? And I think the issues that I hear from people on every side of this issue is, you know, education, they see as increasingly dwindling zero-sum game. There's only so much money that's going to be made available for this sort of diversity of schools universe that we're entering into and want to grow. The people in traditional public schools really truly believe that if charter schools are rampant and are much more available to people, people may choose that, and that might be a good thing, but it will take resources out of the public schools. And then then who's going to be left in those public schools?
If I could clarify that, a charter school, which is a public school, right, receives 70% of the funding of the traditional public schools. So to say it takes money out is exactly backwards.
Right, but the full amount doesn't go to the traditional public school then. They do lose that full amount of money.
Well, only to the extent that they lose the students, but they have more money per student than if there were not a charter school.
Yeah, and I think so Daryl has made that point that they don't get money for the building and for some of the other.
70%.
Yeah.
But there are other complications here as well. I mean, in many cases, charter schools are not serving the most costly to educate students. Some charter schools are, but others are cropping the bottom.
The debate will continue in the House and the Senate and here in subsequent programs. But for now, I want to thank my guest, Daryl Allison, president of Parents for Education Freedom in North Carolina, Helen Ladd, a public policy professor at the Sanford School at Duke, Dave DeWitt, WUNC's education reporter, and Paul Stamm, a representative of North Carolina, Republican representative from the 37th District. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, the music of Delta Ray. Stay tuned.